Let me start by putting this into a little bit of context, okay? After the Oslo Accords were signed in 1993, the donors, the Western governments, made a major investment in the Palestinian territories, a major economic investment and political investment. And one of the main beneficiaries from this was the telecommunications sector. The World Bank was tasked with this, and there was a huge amount of money went into the Palestinian territories. And remember that during the before the Oslo Agreement, during the First Intifada, which started in 1987, the territories were completely isolated. And the Palestinians were forbidden by the Israelis from using any forms of communication. The Israelis did not want the Palestinians talking to the outside world. And there was a very, very small number of telephone lines going from Palestine outside. Even using the fax was very difficult. The Israelis wanted to keep a lid on what was going on. They didn't want to give the First Intifada any oxygen at all. Now you have the Madrid process, you have the Oslo Peace Accords, and then all of a sudden that breaks open in 1993, 1994. Now it's not by coincidence, I think, that was also the time when the internet was born. In the early 1990s, and the whole sort of IT revolution began. The Palestinian sort of experiment and the internet were born basically at the same time. Now, the Palestinians have been one of the foremost beneficiaries of IT. But I think the important thing to remember is that the foundation for this was built during the peace years of Oslo. 1993 to 2000, not during the years of the Intifada. You have to go back to the Oslo years to sort of understand the background. As I say, major investment in telecommunications among several sort of sectors of the economy, mainly through the World Bank. Now, telecommunications, what they did was they started from scratch, and that meant that they could put in the latest technology. They could use the latest technology that was available. So you had an incredibly up-to-date modern infrastructure, telecommunications infrastructure that went in. The switches, the fiber optic cables, all that sort of stuff. Had a fantastic system within Gaza, the Gaza Strip, and also within in the West Bank, and then between the two. Very strong, very robust. And you had a lot of other good things happening. First of all, you had the development of a private sector in the Palestinian territories. You know, the model of development that the Western donors favored, obviously, was a liberal one. And you saw the creation of Paltel, a Palestinian Telecommunications Corporation, Paltel it was called. And then later on, I think in what was the date? I mean, 1997, I think. Jawal, Jawal. You probably both remember that. The mobile phone. Now, Jawal was owned, actually, initially, was completely owned by Paltel. So you have a combination of a new telecommunication system, the infrastructure on the one hand, and the private sector, which is again sort of created out of nothing, on the other. Thirdly, you had the return of a lot of very, very sophisticated and well-trained Palestinians from the diaspora, from abroad, who came back to invest in Palestine during the Oslo years, and they included some very prominent IT specialists, like Sam Bahour, for example. I don't know if you guys met any of these people when you were there, but very interesting people with, you know, Sam Bahour, yeah. Very, very, and Marwan Terazi, I think, I mean, it's some time since I studied this, and I'm coming to this cold at the moment. But, you know, you had people who came back from who'd been out of the country during the Intifada, who came back to sort of get involved in the rebuild in the building of a Palestinian state, and they included some people with, you know, 2 degrees in IT and software developers and real specialists in their field, many of whom had gone through universities in the States or in Europe and were very, very capable people. Now they came back, and so their expertise was available. Fourthly, you had a commitment by the Israeli IT sector, which was one of the strongest in the world, to work with the Palestinians, the sort of fledgling IT sector that was emerging in this sort of new Palestinian state. And the Israelis clearly had a vision here. They would use the Palestinian manpower. They would provide the capital, and the Palestinians would provide the people. And that was the kind of model of development that the Israelis foresaw, the relationship between Israel and the Palestinian territories, back in the good old days of Oslo. So you had a number of factors which came together, combined, of course, all of this combines with the availability of capital. You had a number of factors which came together, which created a very, very vibrant telecommunications industry. All of a sudden, you have a sort of mobile phone provider, Jawal, a local Palestinian mobile phone provider, and you have Paltel, which is responsible for telecommunications and hence for the phone lines and which allowed people to get to access the internet. And the Palestinians are, as we know, one of the most educated people in the world, or certainly the Arab world. So all of these factors came together and created, first of all, enormous demand for IT and IT usage, particularly the mobile technology, but also for computers. And on the other hand, you had the Palestinians themselves were able to supply that demand to some extent because, as I say, they had a strong and robust infrastructure. They had capital, and they had a pretty sophisticated and very driven, motivated private sector. So all of that meant that within a very short space of time, you have a ton of Palestinians that are using the tools. They know how to use it. They have access to it. They have access to telephones. And you have supply and demand sort of driving each other through the early years of the Oslo Peace Accords. And that produces, by the end of the Oslo decade in 2000, it produces a very, very robust IT sector. And you have a lot of people who are using the internet. It's gone from nothing up to, I don't remember the exact statistics, but it's quite dramatic. Then we come to the Intifada. Now, I should sort of go back a stage. This was not without its complications because under the Oslo Accords, Israel and the Palestinians sort of hammered out a series of agreements in these various areas, economic, security, et cetera. I think it was the Paris Accords in 1995, which sort of provided a series of sort of technical annexes, if you like, to the political accord, which was signed in Washington between Arafat and Rabin in 1993. So the Paris Accords contained one solid component on telecommunications, which imposed a series of very, very major constraints on the Palestinians. They were not allowed... Let me think about this. They were not allowed to upload to satellites. Their bandwidth was very restricted. A whole series of restrictions that the Israelis placed on them. They could not access the World Wide Web directly. They had to go through Israeli internet service providers. So that meant that what you had was, if you're a Palestinian NGO, say in Ramallah, you first of all had to go through Paltel, which was the kind of the central node. And then from Paltel, you went through Israel before you could get onto the internet. Now, that was a constraint. The second thing was that they there were two other Israeli mobile phone providers in the West, on the West Bank. The Israeli market for mobile phones was more or less exhausted because everybody had a mobile phone. So the Israeli providers, like what were they now? Orange, for example, was one of them. There was another one, I can't remember now. As I say, I'm pretty cold on this, but there were two Israeli Palphone, I think it was. They saw that there was a very lucrative market for mobile technology in the Palestinian territory. You had tons of Palestinians who wanted mobile phones. So they insisted on having a piece of the action. And that was written into the Paris Accords in 1995. That meant that that Jawal was kind of fighting for the market alongside Orange and this other Israeli provider that came onto the scene. I'm not remembering its name at the moment, but and nobody anticipated back in 1995 or 1996 when all of this stuff began. Nobody anticipated that the demand for cell phones would be, for mobile technology would be as incredible as it turned out to be. You had other constraints. One was that was basically corruption. Arafat gave a monopoly to Paltel for I think it was for 10 years. In other words, from 1996 or 1997 when this agreement kicked in, through to 2007. So that gave Paltel 10 years of monopoly. Now the argument was that Paltel needed a little bit of elbow room to develop the infrastructure, but the problem was that that meant there could be no competition at all, and so Paltel was able to charge rates which were way above the market, were really unjustifiable rates, it sort of suffocated it prevented the real development of the Palestinian telecommunications sector. So you had a number of external and political and economic and internal constraints that were imposed at the outset. During the peace years of the Oslo Accords between 1993 and 2000, none of this really mattered because the Israelis wanted the Palestinians to succeed. They allowed the Palestinian IT sector to develop. It was quite remarkable. I mean, it was, as I said, huge development, very speedy development. But with the arrival of the Intifada in 2000, the Israelis suddenly realized that information was a crucial element in the war between Israel and the Palestinians, because that clearly was what it was. And the result was, you see this in many different ways. For example, when the Israelis went back into Ramallah and they reoccupied the major cities in March and April of 2003 in Operation Defensive Shield, first thing they did was they went into the NGO offices and they seized the hard drives from the computers. They cut Paltel's fiber optic cables in Nablus, which was the center for Paltel's operations. They sliced them, they cut them. So for a couple of weeks, no Palestinians could get onto the internet. They managed to reroute in a very interesting way through an Israeli service provider, through East Jerusalem, I think. But the Israelis realized that communications and telecommunications were an absolutely crucial part of this war, which was as much about propaganda and information, getting the message out, as it was about fighting on the ground. Amira Hess is very interesting and prominent Israeli journalist. She, when she was writing about Operation Defensive Shield, she had one story which was entitled Operation Destroy the Data. So what had happened was that during the peace years, IT and telecommunications was a bridge to peace between Israelis and Palestinians. But during the years of the Intifada, it became a weapon of war. And you see this in lots of different ways. You know, the Palestinian hackers tried to get into the Israeli system, and I think they managed to close down. They managed to close down the Israeli stock exchange, or something quite big for a time. And the Israeli hackers also went at the Palestinians. So you had a net war that was going on in cyberspace, which kind of reflected the war that was going on the ground. And the diasporas come into the picture as well. You have Israelis, or the Jewish diaspora outside Israel, and a Palestinian diaspora outside the Middle East, which are kind of fighting each other through this net war. So suddenly the whole relationship, the IT relationship between Israel and Palestine, is turned onto its head. Now, that's the political context. What's particularly interesting, I think, is that under the pressure of the Intifada and the closures in particular, Palestinians turn to the internet. I mean, they can't get out of their towns. There are roadblocks on the roads leading into their towns. They're liable to get picked up and arrested at roadblocks. Their means, their opportunities for leisure, for receiving information, for meeting, for exchanging goods, for selling their potatoes down the road or whatever they did, are really reduced by the Israeli occupation. And so they turn in very large numbers to the internet. And what you see is a huge paradox, is that demand for mobile technology and IT in general soars during the years of the Intifada. And IT is one of the drivers of the Palestinian economy in the first 3 or 4 years between 2000 and 2004. The ISPs hire people, software developers. You know, there's an explosion of courses at universities like Bir Zeit and Al-Quds in Jerusalem. Software developers sort of come onto the market, and remarkably, there are jobs for them, even as employment is falling off in almost every other sector of the Palestinian economy. So it's very interesting, I think, and very paradoxical. But IT becomes one of the very few engines for economic development during the Intifada. The problem is that could not last because of the internal and external constraints that I was talking about earlier. Paltel's monopoly becomes a major break on the real development of the IT sector in the territories. And Paltel, because there is basically no Palestinian government, there's no IT strategy. And the result is that Paltel is free to set tariffs, but also decide where investments are made. And of course, Paltel invests in the urban areas, not in the villages and the rural communities, which is where telecommunications are really, really needed. So you get Paltel pouring money into, Nablus, Hebron, Ramallah, and these other towns, but the rural areas get starved, and that contributes to a growing digital divide within the territories between the urban areas and the rural areas, and also leads to a disinvestment in the rural economy in Palestine, which is really very serious. So the economy kind of the IT sector it grows very dramatically on the one hand, but also has the kinds of is also held back on the other, and has, I won't say it contains the seeds of its own destruction, but there's a potential for concentration and a very, very unhealthy monopoly sort of built into it that goes alongside this growth. Now, this is incredibly important to understand, this whole background, because what it means is that IT is integrated into the Palestinian economy in a way that is, to my knowledge, absolutely unique. And it's integrated from the very get-go, from the beginning of the whole peace process. IT is not an add-on the way it is in many developing countries. You have the entire population, all of the Palestinians have mobile phones. Some of them have two, and some of them even have three mobile phones, as you've both seen. Communications in a situation like the occupation become incredibly important, almost as important as food and education and other basic services. and basic needs. And that's the context in which NGOs and civil society use IT during the Intifada. Everybody's using it. I wouldn't say everybody, because it's not universal, but many Palestinians have access to it, and many Palestinians are using it. And that's what makes this such a very interesting case study, I think.